Thank you, and welcome everybody to this BTS 2020 auction webcast. And I have with me today Rachel Northcutt, also from NERA, the auction manager for the BTS auctions, as well as representatives from the EDCs to help us answer any questions you might have. As was mentioned, we'll respond to questions as time permits at the end of the presentation. And to the extent that you're asking a question on contents on the slides, we'll try to address the questions as we go. Before we start, just a reminder and a disclaimer that throughout this presentation, we'll be making statements that describe and refer to documents and agreements. And those statements are summaries only, and they're qualified in their entirety by my reference on this slide to the governing document for the BTS auction process. And those governing documents include the order from the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities in the BTS proceeding, BPU docket ER19040428, dated November 13, 2019, as well as the final document, as well have been approved by the board and posted to the BGS auction website. And those include the auction rules, so the final BGS CIEP auction rules, as well as the final BGS RSCP auction rules, the final supplier master agreements, or SMAs, the BGS CIEP supplier master agreement, and BGS RSCP supplier master agreement, as well as each of the electric distribution companies, or EDCs, company-specific addendum, including their draft tariff sheet and pricing factors. Now, those final documents will be posted to the BGS auction website as soon as they become available. At this point, what is posted to the BGS auction website are the documents that the electric distribution companies, or EDCs, have filed with the board to comply with the order that I just mentioned. So we're at, in this diagram, at the compliance filing stage, so the second last step. And once the board has reviewed the documents submitted by the EDCs in compliance of the board order and has determined that they do comply with that order, then they will become the final documents and be posted as such on the BGS auction website. The compliance filing was completed by November 25th and includes the schedule for the auctions, the supplier master agreements, the auction rules, and the company-specific addendums. The board decision in the proceeding followed the prior events of the proceeding, starting with the proposal by the EDCs in response to the board order to file such a proposal in their July filing. That was followed by initial comments by the parties, and the parties also had an opportunity for oral comments at a legislative type hearing. At that hearing and in those comments, there were a number of concerns expressed regarding the fact that the PJM-based residual auction for the delivery year 2022-23 had not occurred, and the date for the occurrence of that auction was not known, leading to an unknown capacity price for the third year of the BGS RSCP supply period. To address these concerns, the EDCs made a supplemental filing in October to make an amendment and a supplement to their proposal and a change to the supplier master agreement for the BGS RSCP auction, and then parties filed final comments, and the board considered the entire record in rendering its decision in November. Once the final documents are posted to the BGS auction website, participants bear full responsibility for reviewing those final documents. With that background in mind, we'll cover the following in this presentation. Just a reminder of the roles of the electric distribution companies, EDCs, the auction manager, staff, and the board in the process, an overview of the board's decision, in the order that I mentioned from November 13, 2019. Then I'll pass it along to Rachel, who will take us through a description of the BGS website, a timeline for the auction process, remembering that that timeline is part of the compliance filing that is currently before the board, a overview of the application process, and then I will speak at the end and provide some highlights of the supplier master agreement and provide details of the auction rules for both the BGS RSCP auction and BGSC IEP auction, and provide some practicalities of the bidding procedures at the end. The EDCs are responsible for making to the board a proposal regarding the BGS auction process, and NERA serves as auction manager and administers the BGS auction process, including portions of the process that are related to the application process that we'll discuss in greater detail in this presentation, and probably of the most, the greatest importance, given that the deadlines for the Part 1 application on December 17th is fast approaching. Throughout the process, the board staff is consulted on various matters, including the auction parameters that are included in the auction process, and the board advisor monitors the BGS auction process and advises the board throughout. Once the auctions have concluded, if they're approved by the board, then those auction results are binding on bidders and on the EDCs, and the board approval process again this year is expected to be limited to 2 business days. I'll talk in the next few slides on the board order in this proceeding and the board decision that then rules the documents for the BGS auction process. At a high level, the board decision was really to maintain the building blocks of the BGS auction process as they have been used in past auctions. So I'll mention those building blocks here. The first is the auction format that is used to receive and to evaluate bids. And that auction format is a clock auction. That's a multiple round, multiple product auction format. And each round, the prices tick down as long as there's more supply that's being bid than is needed. And the auction closes when there's just enough supply being bid for the tranches that are needed through the auction. I say the auction here, but there are really 2 distinct auctions. One for the larger commercial and industrial customers, which is the BGS CIEP auction, and one for residential and smaller commercial customers, which is the BGS RSCP auction. These 2 auctions will start on 2 different days. So the BGS RSCP auction will start on the first Monday in February, February 3rd, 2020, and the BGS CIEP auction will start on the prior Friday, with the possibility that both auction would be concurrent on that Monday, February 3rd, 2020, and following days. The supply period for the BGS CIEP auction and the BGS RSCP auctions are different. It's 1 year for the BGS CIEP auction, but it's a 3-year term for the BGS RSCP auction. While the auctions are separate, the supply periods are different, there are different documents for the 2 auctions, there is a common application process. For both auctions, the Part 1 applications are due, as I mentioned, December 17th, so 2 weeks from now, and the Part 2 applications, for those applicants that are successful in the Part 1 application and that become qualified bidders, those Part 2 applications will be due January 9th, 2020. The board also approved the supplier master agreement, and there are no notable changes from last year except for the addition of the supplement for the BGS RSCP Supplier Master Agreement, and I'll talk about that shortly. So the board will be approving the Supplier Master Agreement as well as the auction rules and the company-specific addendums, basically all of the governing documents for the BGS auction process. And the board has also agreed again this year to consider the results of the auction within 2 business days of the close of the last auction. The supplement is the element of note here for the BGS RSCP Supplier Master Agreement. And when I gave a little bit of a summary of the proceeding, I mentioned that there was some concern expressed because the PJM base residual auction for the 2022-2023 delivery year did not occur as scheduled. And for that reason, the price in the third year of the BGS RSCP supply period is not known. For that reason, and to address this uncertainty, the EDCs propose a supplement to the BGS RSCP supplier master agreement, and BGS RSCP suppliers that accept the supplement to the BGS RSCP supplier master agreement will be paid the difference between the capacity price as charged by PJM in that 2022-2023 delivery year and a capacity proxy price. And the capacity proxy price was proposed by the EDCs and accepted by the board to be $162.13 per megawatt day for PSE&G and $152.06 per megawatt day for the other two EDC, which represents roughly an historical average of the capacity prices for those zones. Now, of note, I said that the BGS RSCP suppliers would be paid a difference that assumes that the capacity price charged by PJM in that delivery year is greater than the capacity proxy price. The reverse is true as well. So if it goes the other way, then BGS RSCP suppliers would be charged the difference between those two values. Similarly, the rate for customers would be correspondingly adjusted for any difference between the capacity price charged by PJM and the capacity proxy price as set in this proceeding. Last item here is that any such payments for capacity are only for the 2022-2023 delivery year, would only occur in that delivery year, and would be a separate line item on the supplier invoice. Additional actions by the board that we want to talk about here. One was in approving a change and enhancement to the process for foreign applicants or for applicants that rely on the final standing of a foreign guarantor. So going forward, the EDCs make available to these foreign applicants or applicants relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor 2 rounds of reviews of the documents that are required by the SMAs for such applicants or guarantors. So those documents include a legal opinion on the enforceability of either the supplier master agreement or the guarantee, a secretary certificate, as well as additional certificates to make sure that the supplier or the guarantor is authorized by its governing board to enter into the agreement. So a applicant, foreign applicant, or applicant relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor will now be able to submit draft documents. So this is entirely optional, but such a party would be able to submit draft documents basically with the Part 1 application. So the due date is 1 day after the Part 1 applications are due on December 18th. And if those draft documents are submitted then the applicants will be provided with the results of a review by the EDCs of those draft documents by mid-January and would then have a further opportunity to submit updated documents to the extent that the EDCs are requiring changes for those documents to be acceptable. And finally, the applicants would receive results of review of any such updated documents that were submitted a week later and prior to the beginning of the auctions. With that, I'll turn it over to Rachel to talk, give an overview of the process, and provide some announcements. Rachel?
Thank you, Chantal. As said, in the following section, I'll provide an overview of the auction process and some information regarding some of the key announcements that have been made by the auction manager. So the BGS auctions are part of one auction process, but they occur as two separate auctions for two types of customers, a CIEP auction for larger commercial and industrial customers, and an RSCP auction for residential and small commercial customers. BGS CIEP customers are on an hourly price plan, and the CIEP auction determines a price per EDC that is measured in dollars per megawatt day. BGS RSCP customers are on a stable price plan, and the RSCP auction determines an all-in price for each EDC that's measured in cents per kilowatt hour. Winning BGS CIEP suppliers will enter into a contract for a term of just 1 year, while winning BGS RSCP suppliers will enter into a contract for a term of 3 years. The table shown here lists a number of rate classes that are considered CIEP customers regardless of their size. For other rate classes, customers that are at or above a threshold of 500 kW are considered CIEP customers, and customers below 500 kW are RSCP customers. Customers not served by the four EDCs are served by third-party suppliers. Both CIEP and RSCP customers may switch into and out of BGS to be served by a third-party supplier, provided that they give appropriate notice to the EDC. And monthly switching data and statistics for each EDC can be found on the monthly data page of the BGS website. Although the two auctions are held separately, they share the same clock auction format, where prices tick down when there is excess supply. There are four products in each auction. These are the tranches being procured for each of the four EDCs. A tranche is a fixed percentage of BGS load, and within each auction, tranches for all of the EDCs are procured at the same time. Bidding in the auction progresses in rounds, where in each round, bidders specify how many tranches they'd like to supply at the prices listed by the auction manager. Suppliers may switch their bids between EDCs during a round, as well as reduce their bids for an EDC. The prices will continue to tick down until the number of tranches bid is equal to the number of tranches needed. Once the auctions have finished, the board will have 2 business days to review the auction results. The board will review the results of the auctions separately, but could decide to approve the results of one auction and not the other. However, the board must consider the results for all four EDCs within a given auction and not for each EDC separately. So either the results of a given auction are approved for all four EDCs or for none at all. On November 13th, the auction manager provided a number of parameters for both the CIEP and RSCP auctions, including the minimum and maximum starting prices and the tranche sizes. For the CIEP auction, the minimum starting price is $550 per megawatt day, and the maximum starting price is $700 per megawatt day. The starting price in round one for each EDC in the CIEP auction will not be lower than 550, and it will not be higher than 700. A tranche in the CIEP auction is equal to approximately 75 megawatts on an eligible basis. And please also note that the peak load share values in this table have been updated from the EDC's July filing with the board. BGS CIEP suppliers receive payments from the EDCs, who in turn receive payments from BGS CIEP customers for energy, ancillary services, transmission, and capacity. The BGS CIEP auction price is not an all-in price. BGS CIEP suppliers are compensated for certain services based on predetermined rates, like ancillary services, for example. BGS CIEP suppliers are also paid a CIEP standby fee that's collected from all CIEP customers, including those served by third-party suppliers. For the RSCP auction, the starting price in round one for each EDC will not be less than 12.5 cents per kilowatt hour and will not be greater than 18 cents per kilowatt hour. A tranche in the BGS RSCP auction is approximately 100 megawatts on an eligible basis. And again, note here that the peak load share values provided in this table have been updated from the values presented in the EDC's July filing with the board. The BGS RSCP auction price is an all-in price, and suppliers are paid this price for every kilowatt hour of load served. However, this price is also adjusted by a predetermined contract-specific seasonal factor. The seasonal factors are EDC-specific and are set for the duration of the BGS RSCP supplier master agreement. Each EDC sets a summer seasonal factor and a winter seasonal factor, and provisional seasonal factors have been set equal to 1, and final seasonal factors will be announced on January 23rd, 2020. This slide illustrates that the rates paid by BGS RSCP customers, or that the rate paid by BGS RSCP customers, is a tranche-weighted average of the last three auction prices adjusted by a seasonal factor. Payments received by the BGS RSCP suppliers aren't equal to this amount, but instead are equal to the RSCP auction price adjusted by the seasonal factor. The example here uses a summer seasonal factor of 1.0284 for the 2020 RSCP auction. So in this next section, I'll highlight some useful information about the BGS auction website, and then I'll provide an overview of the auction and application timeline going forward. Information on the BGS auction website is organized by page, and pages are grouped together under different tabs. And hovering over each tab will display the available pages. The bidder info tab houses the pages that contain the auction rules, as well as the supplier master agreements. Bidders should refer to the contract and credit page, also located on the bidder info tab, to find the standard forms of the pre-auction letters of credit, as well as other credit documents that are required as part of a bidder's application to participate in the auction. Just a bit of information here about announcements and events that have already occurred this year. First, bidders had the opportunity to propose modifications to the standard forms of the letters of credit, and the auction manager has since posted the final versions of the letters of credit to the contract and credit page on the BGS website. Also on this page, bidders can find a final list of modifications to the pre-auction and post-auction letters of credit that are acceptable to the EDCs on an optional basis. Please note that versions of the illustrative Part 1 and Part 2 applications were posted on October 3rd, but final versions have since been posted to the application process page of the BGS website. These final versions include updated dates and also incorporate the minimum and maximum starting prices. So now we'll look ahead at what's to come leading up to the auctions. First, it's important to note that this slide lists some dates and deadlines that were included by the EDCs in their compliance filing. So these dates would become final if the board approves the compliance filing by the EDCs. Also important to note is that the process for applying to participate in the auctions is a two-step process in which applicants submit a Part 1 application followed by a Part 2 application. The Part 1 application is currently available, and application materials are due by 12 p.m. noon on December 17th. The auction manager will then notify applicants who have completed all requirements of the Part 1 application that they are now considered qualified bidders and may submit a Part 2 application. The Part 2 application materials are due by January 9th. And then qualified bidders that complete all requirements of the Part 2 application will become registered bidders. And registered bidders will have an opportunity to practice submitting their bids in a trial auction set to take place January 23rd in preparation of the actual auctions, which will begin Friday, January 31st for CIEP bidders and Monday, February 3rd for RSCP bidders. Just some additional important dates to note. The auction manager will provide bidders with the starting prices of the CIEP auction on January 28th and the starting prices of the RSCP auction on January 29th. The auction manager will also provide the tranche fees and the final decrements on January 21st and will provide the transmission rates and final seasonal factors on January 23rd. As I mentioned earlier, bidders can start filling out the Part 1 application online right now. Both the Part 1 and Part 2 applications are available on a separate website that is not the BGS auction website that houses the governing documents. And the applications are available on bgs-application.com. Bidders who have already requested login credentials and bidders that have participated in previous BGS auctions should have received their login credentials to access the application yesterday. And if you believe you should have received this information but did not receive it, please contact the auction manager at bgs-auction@nira.com. And if you're in need of login credentials, you can request them on the homepage of the application website as well as on the Get Account tab. And after clicking the link to request an account, you'll be prompted to provide required contact information, including name, company name, and an email address to receive the credentials. The auction manager will then provide you with a username and a password to access the application, as well as some general instructions for its completion. After logging in, a number of additional tabs will appear on the application website. Bidders should click on the Part 1 application tab to access the form and should navigate to the Inserts tab to download the additional documents that are uploaded into the form. And I'll give a bit more information on what inserts are in the next section of the presentation. But please note that the inserts that you'll need are not only available on the application website, they're also on the application process page on the BGS website that houses the documents. So in this next section, I'll give a bit more detail on the actual application process and the Part 1 and Part 2 requirements. As mentioned earlier, the application forms are completed almost entirely online. Applicants should fill in the form and complete and upload any required supporting documents as needed. Some of these documents you'll be required to upload to the application forms are called inserts, and these are Microsoft Word files that will sometimes require a signature by the bidder. If in this case, you'll need to print, sign, scan, and upload the scanned copy of that particular insert back into the form. The only piece of the application that is required in hard copy is the pre-auction security, and that's due with the bidder's Part 2 application. The pre-auction security will need to be mailed via overnight delivery service to the auction manager's office. So this slide gives an overview of the Part 1 application requirements and lists some of the information you'll need to provide in the Part 1 form. The first four sections of the form collect contact information for the bidder and for a number of representatives. Here, a bidder will be asked to designate what is called the bidder team, and that will consist of an authorized representative as well as some additional nominees. And these individuals are authorized to act on behalf of the applicant and will be copied on all correspondence from the auction manager. In these first sections, the bidder will also name a legal representative in New Jersey, and this can be an entity or an individual who accepts service of process on the applicant's behalf. Additionally, the bidder will name a credit representative who may answer any questions about the applicant's financial information. So BGS suppliers are required to be or to become load-serving entities in PJM. And in Section 5, bidders who are not already load-serving entities will need to certify that nothing impedes their ability to becoming one by the start of the supply period. Starting in Section 6, you'll also need to provide some financial information and supporting documents for the applicant, as well as for the guarantor if you intend to rely on the financial standing of a guarantor. This information includes financial statements and credit ratings, and this information will be used to determine a credit worthiness assessment for the bidder, and in turn also determines what a bidder will need to provide as pre-auction security with its Part 2 application. So foreign applicants or applicants relying on a foreign guarantor can or have the option to provide draft documents in Section 8 of the Part 1 application. This process is optional, as discussed before, but please note that if you're choosing to provide draft documents for EDC review, these files must be received by December 18th, which is the day after the Part 1 date. You may upload them into this section in the form. Alternatively, you can send them to us via email at bgs-auction@nira.com. Sections 9 and 10 will require the bidder to indicate whether it's applying to participate in the RSCP or the CIEP auction or in both auctions, and then the bidder will be required to make a number of certifications agreeing to the auction rules and to the terms of the supplier master agreement. As mentioned earlier, the form will prompt you to provide a number of inserts. Again, these are Microsoft Word documents, sometimes requiring a signature. These files are available on the Inserts tab of the application website and the application process page of the BGS auction website. And they're organized into different categories specific to each auction. So bidders should download the inserts that correspond to the auction in which that bidder is applying to participate. Please note, though, that all bidders, regardless of which auction you're applying for, will need to download the zip file containing inserts 1 through 5. So, for example, if you're applying to participate in only the RSCP auction, you should download the zip file containing inserts 1 through 5 and also the zip file containing inserts 6 to 8. There will be an appendix at the end of the posted version of this presentation that will list which bidders should download which inserts, so please refer to those slides if you're unsure of which inserts you might need to include in your application. This slide gives an overview of how the form functions. You'll see that application form includes text boxes and clickable radio buttons that, depending on your answer to those questions, will trigger additional sections of the form to appear. There is also a toolbar on the right-hand side of the form that contains some useful information and documents, like a glossary, a document describing the application review process and timelines, and some general instructions for completing the form. You can save the form as you go. You can save your progress in the form and then log out to finish at a later time. But when you're ready for the auction manager to review your application, please hit the submit button. Once you've submitted the form, you should receive an email confirming that the form was received, and you'll also be temporarily locked out of your account while the auction manager reviews the submitted information. The auction manager will provide a notice with a review of the application materials by 6 p.m. on the same day that the form is submitted, if the form is received by 12 or before 12 Eastern on that day. If the form is submitted after 12 p.m., the notice is provided by 12 p.m. on the following business day. And these notices are sent to the bidder team, and again, that's the authorized representative and any nominees. If the application materials are complete, the bidder will receive a notice via email confirming that no information or no further information regarding the Part 1 application is required of the bidder. But if the auction manager requires clarification and if the materials are found to be deficient, the auction manager will send a notice requiring a response from the bidder to cure the deficiencies by either 12 p.m. on the Part 1 date or by 6 p.m. on the next business day, whichever comes later. If a bidder's Part 1 application is deemed complete, the bidder will receive a notification of qualification, and this will contain that creditworthiness assessment and provide instructions for the required pre-auction security due with a bidder's Part 2 application. And only bidders that receive the notification of qualification will be able to submit a Part 2 application. Like the Part 1, the Part 2 application is completed online, and it will become accessible after the window to submit the Part 1 materials has closed. The Part 2 application functions similarly to the Part 1 application, with enterable fields for text and upload spots for required inserts. And if you'd like to review the structure of either application right now, there are illustrative versions of the Part 1 and Part 2 forms available on the application process page on the BGS auction website. In the Part 2 application, bidders will need to confirm the contact information for the authorized representative and also confirm the auctions in which the bidder is applying to participate. For each auction that a bidder is applying to participate in, that bidder will need to provide an indicative offer, confirm the amount of required pre-auction security that the bidder is providing, provide the information needed to prepare the supplier master agreements, as well as make some additional certifications regarding compliance with the association and confidential information rules. Again, remember that the pre-auction security is the only piece of the application that is submitted in hard copy. So here I'll give a bit more information about the indicative offer. And this is the maximum number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid across all four EDCs at the minimum starting price, and the maximum number of tranches a bidder is willing to bid across all four EDCs at the maximum starting price. For each auction, the indicative offer at the maximum starting price determines the maximum number of tranches that the bidder can bid in that auction. And this is also called a bidder's initial eligibility. The indicative offer also determines the amount of required pre-auction security that a bidder must submit with its Part 2 application. In addition to providing an indicative offer, RSCP bidders, so not CIEP, but RSCP bidders, will also need to provide a preliminary interest in each EDC at the minimum and maximum starting prices. These values are provided for each EDC separately, and they're purely informative. Also, it should be noted that CIEP bidders must submit an indicative offer at the maximum starting price of at least two tranches. So pre-auction security is provided for each auction separately, such that bidders applying to participate in both the RSCP and CIP auctions must submit pre-auction security for each auction. For CIEP bidders, the pre-auction security is a letter of credit in an amount of $375,000 per tranche of that bidder's indicative offer at the maximum starting price. For RSCP bidders, they're also required to provide a letter of credit as pre-auction security but in an amount equal to $500,000 per tranche if that bidder's indicative offer at the maximum starting price. Additionally, the results of an RSCP bidder's creditworthiness assessment may state that the bidder is required to provide additional pre-auction security if, one, that bidder is relying on the financial standing of a guarantor, in which case the bidder will be required to provide a letter of intent to provide a guarantee, or two, if the bidder or the bidder's guarantor does not have sufficient unsecured credit. In this case, the bidder will be required to provide a letter of reference from a bank. Again, this creditworthiness assessment will be provided with a bidder's notification of qualification. The letter of credit for each auction must be in the standard form of the letter of credit for that auction, but bidders can incorporate a number of changes and modifications to the letters of credit that have been deemed acceptable by the EDCs on an optional basis. As mentioned before, these acceptable modifications are available on the contract and credit page of the BGS website. And just a note here that the terms of the RSCP and CIEP pre-auction letters of credit are the same, but each one references the corresponding auction rules and supplier master agreements. So you must use the letter of credit that corresponds to the auction in which you're applying to participate. Just like with the Part 1 application, once you submit the Part 2 application, you should receive an email confirming receipt of the submission, and you'll be temporarily locked out of your account. The auction manager will send a notice either stating that the Part 2 materials are complete or that the materials are deficient. And the response time for bidders responding to a deficiency notice for the Part 2 application is the same as for the Part 1 application, except for pre-auction security. The pre-auction security is reviewed by the auction manager as well as a committee of representatives of the EDCs, and this review may be provided in a separate notice to a bidder and not necessarily at the same time as the notice provided to a bidder about the other Part 2 materials. So I'll now hand things back over to Chantal to provide more information about the application process and requirements, the supplier master agreements.
Thanks, Rachel. And the link between the supplier master agreements and the application process is that the applicants have to agree to these terms in order to qualify for the auction. And we saw that as we reviewed the requirements for the Part 1 application. Now, those agreements are standard statewide, so for all the EDCs, and they are part of the documents that are approved by the board. And that means there's no negotiations on the terms, no possibility of changing the terms for a particular bidder or between a particular bidder and an EDC. These agreements have as appendices the standard form of credit instruments that suppliers can use to post security during the supply period, and that include a standard form of guarantee and a standard form for the letter of credit. Now, we accepted comments on the letters of credit during the fall, and we posted at the same time as for the list of modifications for the pre-auction letter of credit. We also posted a list of acceptable modification for the letter of credit appended to the supplier master agreement on November 11th. And in our documents, typically, we refer to the letter of credit that's appended to the supplier master agreement as the post-auction letter of credit by opposition to the pre-auction letter of credit that's used at the time of the Part 2 application. So all of those modifications can be used on an optional basis. The supplier master agreements are the documents that fully describe the product in the sense that they describe all the responsibilities of BGS suppliers and of the EDCs under the terms of the contract, including describing that the BGS suppliers will be responsible for supplying energy, capacity, ancillary services, transmission, any other service that may be required by PJM or the board to meet its share of the needs of BGS customers. And the Supplier Master Agreement fully describes this full requirements product. We mentioned that there are two agreements, and that's because although the responsibilities are the same, the payment terms between the RSCP and the CIEP suppliers are different. The RSCP suppliers are paid on the basis of an all-in price that's determined through the auction, while BGS CIEP suppliers are paid on various terms, including energy at the PJM spot market and including the price determined through the auction that's paid on the basis of the capacity obligation. Of note is that all BGS suppliers are also responsible for meeting the renewable portfolio standards. And we just have a brief slide here to remind you of those RPS requirements and how compliance works, namely that BGS suppliers will be transferring RECs, Class 1 and Class 2, as well as solar RECs or SRECs to the EDC, and to do that, they need to have a retail LSC account in PJM Gas. The EDCs do submit, on behalf of suppliers, a required annual compliance report, and a supplier that does not meet this requirement will be required under the regulations by the board to pay an alternative compliant payment. Now, I'll use this slide as a bit of a reminder that there was a change in the renewable portfolio standard requirements through the Clean Energy Act in May 2018, and that the board issued an order in the prior BGS proceeding, and that board order is posted to the BGS auction website under auction tab, BGS order page, and is dated December 21st, 2018, that details how there are some BGS suppliers that are exempt from increase in the solar renewable energy credit requirements, and how suppliers that are not exempt, including the winners from this upcoming auction, how the suppliers that are not exempt will have additional obligations to be able to fulfill the solar renewable energy credits that are not supplied by exempt BGS contracts. The BGS auction manager last year posted an example of how that obligation, those obligations work, and how the responsibilities for the non-exempt contracts are distributed on the exempt contracts, rather distributed on the non-exempt contracts, and we will provide a updated example this year for that purpose as well. Quick overview of the credit provision for in each of the supplier master agreements or SMAs. In each case, Article 6 is the article that fully describes the creditworthiness standards, and the security that is required under each of the agreements. For the BGS Supplier Master Agreement, there is a credit exposure per tranche, so $70,000 per tranche, so that's a fixed amount. For the BGS RSCP Supplier Master Agreement, there are two separate credit requirements. The first one is also a fixed amount per tranche, the independent credit requirement, and that's $2.4 million per tranche at the beginning of the supply period, but that amount does decline over the term of the BGS Supplier Master Agreement. So it's also a mark-to-market requirement to take into account of the variations in the energy prices compared to the point at which the auction price was set. Corresponding to those two separate requirements, there are two separate credit lines for which a supplier can qualify. One is for the BGS RSCP independent credit requirement of $2.4 million per tranche, while the other is for both the mark-to-market exposure under all the BGS RSCP supplier master agreement for supplier, as well as any credit exposure that the supplier has under a BGS CIEP supplier master agreement. We'll mention here Section 15.9, which has not changed from the prior year. So just a reminder that this section provides for the recovery and payment adjustment for any changes in transmission-related charges over the term of the BGS contract. And how it works at a practical level is that if there is such a change in a final FERC order, then the EDCs file with the board to be able to collect any changes in the transmission rates from customers, and they do that for the benefit and ultimate payment to BGS suppliers. There is a particular page on the BGS auction website in which documents related to changes in transmission rate under 15.9 are posted. So any filings by the EDCs and orders by the board related to filings for this section 15.9 are posted on the transmission docs page of the auction tab of the BGS auction website. A note that changes are possible during the 3-year supply period for the BGS RSCP supplier master agreement, so that BGS RSCP suppliers could be affected by changes such as the rate design for each of the EDCs. That's subject to an annual review by the board. It's part of the July filing, so there could be rate design changes in the future that could affect BGS suppliers that win at the upcoming auction. Similarly, there could be changes to the renewable portfolio standards or changes to the alternative compliance levels. And finally, there could be changes to the CIP line. So a BGS RSCP supplier is responsible for a percentage of the load of BGS RSCP customers, whoever they are. So any change in the CIP line, there's no grandfathering of such changes under the terms of the BGS RSCP supplier master agreement, and BGS RSCP suppliers could be affected by any such changes in the future. We also have a slide here on the supplement to the BGS RSCP supplier master agreement. We covered that in the first part of the presentation, so I'll just kind of remind you that there's this additional payment for BGS RSCP suppliers that will be the difference between the price charged by PJM in the 2022-2023 delivery year and the capacity proxy price as approved by the board. So I'll next talk about the auction rules. So we saw at a high level earlier in the presentation that we are using a clock auction format for each of the BGS RSCP and BGS CIEP auction. So I'll talk specifically about the rules with respect to how to submit bids in each auction. So at a very general level, a bid is simply a number of tranches for each of the EDCs. So as a reminder, in each round, the auction manager announces prices for each of the EDCs, and a bid is not a price in this case, but it's a quantity. So it's a number of tranches that a bidder is ready to bid and supply at the prices that have been announced. So in this particular example, the bidder is willing at the prices that were announced, which are not put on this slide, but there's some prices that are implicit in the background here. The bidder is willing to bid 10 tranches for PSE&G, 4 for JCP&L, 2 for ACE, and 1 for RICO. There are two rules that that bid must follow. First, the total number of tranches bid across all EDCs. So summing the tranches here, so we have 17 tranches for this particular example and that particular bidder, it cannot exceed the bidder's initial eligibility. And as a reminder, the bidder's initial eligibility is set by the bidder's indicative offer at the maximum starting price. So that's why that indicative offer is particularly important. It determines the amount of pre-auction security that you have to post to the Part 2 application, but it also determines how much you can bid in round 1 of the auction and you will never be able to bid on more tranches than the number of tranches you bid in round one. So really it determines the number of tranches you'll ever be able to bid in that particular auction. The second rule only applies for BGS RSCP bidders. So in the BGS RSCP auction, there's a second constraint, which is that the number of tranches that are bid on any one EDC cannot exceed the load cap that's set for that EDC. And those load caps, as a reminder, were announced with the minimum, maximum, starting price and tranche sizes, megawatt measure, that were announced on November 13th. When the bidding phase closes, so each round has a bidding phase, a calculating phase, and a reporting phase. When the bidding phase closes, the results are calculated, and then in the reporting phase, those results are published and made available to suppliers. What are those results? Those results are, first, the prices are announced for the next bidding phase for the next round. So you see the in round one, the prices that will be the going prices for round two. In addition, you see a range for the total excess supply in the auction, so summing the excess supply across all four EDCs, and then a range is given to you. So the exact amount of total excess supply, in this example, lies between 151 and 155 tranches. That range is fairly narrow, typically, at the start of the auction, and becomes wider as the auction progresses. The ranges are always set so that the upper bound is a number that's divisible by 5. So the bidder has overall or aggregate information, the prices and in aggregate the excess supply in the auction. A bidder has no information about other bidders' bids, identities, or their eligibility to bid in the auction. So the prices will tick down from one round to the next if there is excess supply for an EDC, and those prices will tick down more by more, greater percentages on average at the start of the auction than at the end. So there's three distinct regimes for the decrement formulas. Those decrement formulas are currently in the compliance filing rules, will be in the final rules, but they're still really not final, as they could be revised one last time upon registration of the bidders. They'll be provided to bidders no later than 3 days after the results of the Part 2 application are given. So the three distinct regime mean that the decrements are selected at the start of the auction between 0.5% and 5%, and that goes down in regime 2 to 0.375% to 3.75%, and then finally from 0.25% to 2.5%. So starting in round two, the changes in round two are really that a bidder has various actions they can take. They're always going to be stating the number of tranches that they're willing to bid for each of the EDCs at the prices announced by the auction manager. That's always going to be the case. What a bidder can do compared to round one? Well, first, they could just keep the number of tranches bid the same. A bidder can always simply do that. But a bidder instead could decide to remove some tranches from the auction, meaning stopping to bid on as many tranches as they were in the prior round, or a bidder could switch, meaning that a bidder could keep the same number of tranches in total, but rearrange or redistribute the tranches across the EDCs, reducing the tranches bid on one EDC to increase the tranches bid on another, or a bidder could do both, so redistribute tranches across the EDCs, but also remove some tranches from the auction. Now, an important rule is that if a bidder does request a reduction in the number of tranches that are bid on a particular EDC, either because the bidder is removing those tranches from the auction or redistributing the tranches to another EDC, then a bidder can only reduce if the price for that EDC has ticked down. If the price for the EDC has not ticked down, then the bidder must maintain their offer, so maintain the number of tranches that they bid on that particular EDC. And that's in that sense that all bids are binding. So the rules in round two, first, the total number of tranches bid across all EDCs cannot exceed the number of tranches that were bid in round one. So I mentioned that you can never increase the number of tranches in total that you bid in a round, so that the initial eligibility really determines the total number of tranches you'll ever be able to bid in the auction. So that number of tranches that are bid in round one become the number of tranches that you're eligible to bid in round two. Again, for the BGS RSCP auction only, in addition to a statewide load cap, there are also EDC load caps, and the number of tranches that you bid on any one EDC cannot exceed the load cap for that particular EDC. The other rules are not really rules as much as information that you must provide to fully specify your bids starting in round two of the auction. So as I mentioned, it's always going to be true that a bid is going to be a number of tranches for each of the EDCs. Now, if you are withdrawing a tranche, so effecting a reduction in the total number of tranches that you bid, removing some tranches from the auction, then you will be required to specify an exit price. So in the example that we have here, the bidder is bidding the same thing in round one and round two, except for A's. So for A's, the price has ticked down, so the bidder is able to reduce the number of tranches that are bid, and the bidder reduces the number of tranches from 3 to 2. Otherwise, the bid is exactly the same. So in that case, the bidder is required to submit an exit price, and an exit price is simply a final and best offer for the tranches that are being removed from the auction. So in that case, the bidder is saying that for that tranche, the bidder is not willing to bid that tranche at 14.123 cents per kilowatt hour for ACE, but the bidder was willing to bid that tranche at 14.75 cents per kilowatt hour. So there must be some price in between, so greater than 14.123, because the bidder is not willing to bid it there, but as high as 14.75, that is the final and best offer. In this example, that number is 14.7 cents. So that's one instance where the bidder must submit additional information to fully specify the bid. Another circumstance is when switching. Not every time a bidder switches, there's a simple switch from one EDC to another, no additional information is required, but in the circumstance where the bidder is switching into more than one EDC, then the bidder is required to provide additional information. So here's the example. In both round one and round two, the bidder is bidding on 12 tranches total, but the tranches are redistributed in round two, and the bidder is reducing the number of tranches that are bid on JCP&L by 6 to be able to increase the number of tranches on PSCNG by 4 and ACE by 2. In that case, why is more information needed? Well, it's because although the bidder is making a request to switch from JCP&L into PSCNG and ACE, that request could be denied if there's not enough tranches that are bid on JCP&L, so that in addition to the tranches bid at the going price, the auction manager could retain or deny exit or withdrawals that are made on JCP&L and could retain switches. In that case, then the bidder must specify if some but not all of the switches must be retained on JCP&L, where the switches that are allowed will go. So in this case, the bidder is requesting a reduction of 6 tranches on JCP&L. So suppose that to fill the tranche target for JCP&L, the auction manager must retain 4 of those 6 tranches on JCP&L, but 2 tranches are allowed to switch. The question is, will those tranches go to PSCNG or will they go to ACE? And that's the question that the bidder must answer when it's formulating and submitting its bid. and that's called the switching priority. In this example, the bidder is saying that the switches, if not all of the switches are allowed, the tranches that are allowed to switch should go first to PSE&G and next to ACE. There's another circumstance where a bidder will need to provide additional information to fully specify the bid, and that's when a bidder is both switching and withdrawing. So in this example, in round one, the bidder is bidding a total of 10 tranches, and in round two, the bidder is bidding a total of 9 tranches and redistributing the tranches across the EDCs. But the bidder is removing one tranche from the auction. The bidder is doing that by reducing the number of tranches bid on JCP&L by 3, RECO by 1, so a reduction of 4 in total. But at the same time, the bidder is increasing the number of tranches bid on PSE&G by 2 and ACE by 1. So the question is, where does the tranche that is being withdrawn come from? It could come from JCP&L, and for a reduction of 1, that would be a withdrawal, and then 2 tranches would be switched to PSE&G, say, or it could come from RECO, in which case the 3 tranches that are reduced from JCP&L would be switched to PSE&G and ACE. And because there's no specific answer to that question unless there's input from the bidder has to specify where the exit comes from. And in this case, the exit comes from JCP&L. And the reason that it's important is that then the bidder will be able to specify an exit price for the tranche that is being removed from the auction. So those are the circumstances where a bidder would be required to provide additional information, by which I mean information in addition to simply specifying the number of tranches that it wishes to bid for each of the EDCs. Correspondingly, there are some changes in the reporting phase of the round. So in addition to the information that's provided to all bidders, which are the prices for the next round and a range of total excess supply, a bidder also gets a report about its own bid. So starting in round two, where a bidder can withdraw and switch and make those requests, starting in round two, the bidder will find out in the reporting phase whether its request to switch or to withdraw was denied or whether it was accepted. Again, those requests are denied only to the extent that the auction manager needs to retain tranches from exit or switches to fill the tranche target, that is, that the number of tranches bid at the going price are not sufficient to fill those tranche targets. So the process continues and the prices continue ticking down and bidders continue submitting their bids, and the rules are the same in the subsequent rounds of the auction. The auction will close when total excess supply equals 0 and the prices can no longer tick down. Of note is that bidding on all EDCs stop at the same time because there's always the possibility that bidders will switch, and all bidders that win tranches for an EDC get the same price, so it's a uniform type of auction. Finally, I'll say a few words about the practicality of the bidding procedure. As a reminder, there will be trial auctions where you can practice their bidding procedures. The webcast that's held in January for registered bidders is for the purpose of getting you ready for those bidding procedures and informing you about the auction software that is used for submissions of bids, because the bidding is done online, and the submission of bids and the viewing of round results in the reporting phase are through specialized auction software. You'll be logging into the auction software from a web-based platform using a login ID and a password, and we'll provide that information after you have successfully completed the Part 2 application and you have provided your undertakings under the auction process. Now, The system requirements for using this auction software are really minimal, basically a standard PC running Windows 7 or later, or a Mac 10.7 or later, an internet connection, and a supported web browser, and we'll provide you with the list of web browsers that are supported by the auction software so that you can make sure that those web browsers are installed on your machine. We mentioned already that the auction will begin on Monday, February 3rd, 2020 for the BGS RSCP and CIEP the Friday before on January 31st, 2020. We'll be providing a tentative auction schedule to you at the time of the January webcast, and our practice is to provide you with the final actual auction schedule the day before the bidding. Now, talking about the schedule, just a note on additional rules of the auction here that although there's going to be an auction schedule provided to you with start and times for each round, start and times for each phases, bidding phase, calculating phase, recording phase, that schedule is always subject to change. It's subject to change first because bidders have the ability to extend the bidding phase by 15 minutes. And when they do that, it's called calling an extension, which they can do, for example, for technical problems. That being said, the bidding phase in round one is automatically extended for the convenience of all bidders. And you still need to submit a bid in the bidding phase of round one. So if you don't do that and you're deemed to have requested an extension because you did not submit a bid in the bidding phase, your extension will be charged to you, but it will be run concurrently with the automatic extension. So it will not further extend the bidding phase of round one. So that's an extension of time in the bidding phase. Bidders also have an opportunity for an extension of time in the reporting phase, and that's for a period of no less than 20 minutes, but that's only later on in the auction, so if you really need extra time to consider your bid. So it's available after round 10 and after total excess supply in the previous round has reached a certain threshold. Finally, the auction manager can also call a timeout. For example, if there are general technical difficulties or for other reasons, can call a timeout that can change the schedule of the auction. And that concludes presentation portion of the webcast.